Hello, my name is Lily Chaudhry, and you're listening to Happiness Now, Secrets to Success from the East and West. This podcast is all about empowering us to achieve happiness and success in every aspect of our life, and we'll discover some of the wisdom found in different cultures about this topic. These talks are based on the works of Gautam Alisha. He's a renowned teacher, trainer, and motivational speaker and author for over 15 years based in Lahore, Pakistan. Today's topic is called spiritual awakening. We'll discuss what that means and look at some real-life examples of spiritual awakenings. After that, we'll see why we need it and why we should be prepared for it. Then we'll discover the number one trigger that causes a person's spiritual awakening. And lastly, we'll look at some of the prerequisites and some of the signs of spiritual awakenings. So I'm going to start out our podcast today with the story of a man. If there are any South Asian middle-aged people listening, they'll likely have already heard of this story because there have been several movies and TV shows made about this man. This is the story of someone who, after completing his religious education, started serving as an imam or priest at a local mosque in a part of Punjab that is present-day Pakistan. His duties included leading the prayer, giving the Friday sermon, and so on. Meanwhile, he fell in love with a woman of the same village. He was a man of God, but he fell deeply in love with this woman. His love was intense, and keep in mind that each love echoes in its own way. It manifests itself differently with everyone. Just like if we strike 5 utensils against an object, each will produce a different sound. So in the same way, not all love is the same. In this case, his love was very deep and powerful, and it's said that love can devour the purer soul. And this was a man of honesty and decency, and his love had consumed him. Gautam Alisha says that this man's situation was similar to a person standing in the middle of a flooding river who doesn't know how to swim, and he's at the mercy of the thrust of water being directed towards him. He was in the river of love, the river which disrupts and drowns everything, and it did end up disrupting his entire life. He was stopped from marrying this woman that he loved, and it's not clear why, so he had to bear the pain of separation and loss. I mean, we all know that a successful love story ends in a happy family life, some years of companionship, the birth of kids, growing old together, etc. But had he had this ending where he succeeded in marrying this woman, he would probably just be another unknown man who had lived and died. But his life was meant for something greater. With his broken heart, he returned to his old village with a treasure of pain, and he made poetry his escape with the pain of lost love. History also tells us in many examples of people who have gone through this heartache that the agony of unrequited love can turn the ordinary man into something extraordinary. Be that in the field of singing, painting, speaking, science, writing, you name it. Today, the world knows this man as Waris Shah from the 18th century. He was one of the greatest poets of Punjabi poetry. His work has been translated into 46 languages. He's known as the Shakespeare of Punjab. In Lahore, his mausoleum is a place of pilgrimage, especially for the lovesick. Waris Shah's story tells us how we can turn our wounds into wisdom, as Oprah says. Waris's life, like the lives of most great human beings, took a turn that changed his life forever. This turn, this phase, this spiritual awakening is one that enables a person to recognize his own self. We touched on this in a previous podcast, but many spiritual scholars will say that man has two births. One is his physical arrival in the world, and his second birth, through which he meets his original self, is when he figures out the purpose of his being after an internal quest. And the great Roman philosopher Cicero calls the searching out and investigation the primary study of man. Gautam Alisha quotes that a mystic once said, "The recognition of our original self is the destiny that can only be reached after an exhaustively long journey." This is the awakening of ourselves, our spiritual awakening, the awakening of our inner genius, the awakening of the Shakespeare within us, the Waris Shah within us, the Newton within us. And it calls for a long and difficult journey. Just as sometimes we have to cover huge distances to get somewhere, we have to do the same thing to reach our own spirit and go towards our spiritual awakening. And this is the topic for today. First, let's define what is a spiritual awakening. It means waking up from an intoxicated life where we're previously living in ignorance and not knowing our own self. That intoxication could have been caused by certain limiting thoughts or beliefs that were instilled in us in our childhood or just by our own ignorance. Then something happens which induces our sobriety and takes us on a journey to make us aware of who we really are. This is spiritual awakening. We only have one chance, only one life, which makes the task to recognize our true selves all the more important. Another poet writes, Now is the time to wake up from sleep, O dear traveler. Life is passing. And before our last breath leaves us, it's our responsibility to awaken from what we can call the intoxication of ignorance and discover the purpose of our creation, to know who we are. If we die before this awakening, we'll die without fulfilling our primary obligation in this world, and that's to know who we are and why we're here. Dr. Wayne Dyer, an American philosopher and motivational speaker who passed away last year, says that there are three stages of spiritual awakening. Stage one is your beginnings on the path. In this stage, we have certain unwanted experiences, losses, pains, and crises of various kinds. Stage two is called the middle ground. In this stage, we begin to understand some of the meanings and significance of the occurrences that happened in stage one. Dr. Dyer regards the stage as the middle ground of enlightenment. Stage three, he calls pure synchronicity. Here, we're able to see the obstacles on the horizon as simply events. I can probably say that I've been through stage one and stage two in my life. I've had my fair share of pain, whether it be in relationships or losing a family member, but I'm not sure if I'm at stage three just yet, but I hope to get there one day. But in my own life, I feel I have seen someone I know to have had a true spiritual awakening. I mean, he might disagree with me because he's so humble. He's a family friend of ours. His name is Adnan. I bring him up because some of you may already know him through the Serial and Undisclosed podcast that told his story and my sister Robbie's blog about his case. He was only 17 years old when he was wrongly convicted of a murder. And it was in the early days of his incarceration that I saw a big change in him. I mean, he was always a very kind and caring person, but it was in jail behind bars that he turned more towards God. And from his letters and some conversations I had with him years ago, he mentioned that the wrongful conviction and the jail sentence was actually a good thing for him in some ways because it made him turn his life around. And even at the tender age of 17, 18, he was able to think like this. And I remember one thing he said that really touched me. He said that he hoped and wished that his loved ones, his family, his friends, and those who know of him and what happened to him would be able to make that turn themselves without having to go through the pain that he did, that maybe we would learn our lesson through his mistakes. And I'm not really sure I agree that Adnan made too many mistakes. I mean, he was just an ordinary kid who did what most teenagers do. But it's because of his spiritual awakening, his mental growth and maturity, that he's able to be overly hard on himself like this. But he turned the injustice that was dealt to him into the reason for his spiritual awakening. And I'm confident he'll be home any day soon and be able to tell his own story. Qasim Ali Shah is a proficient student of Sufism, a school of thought within Islam that focuses on spirituality. And because we're talking about spiritual awakening, this subject can be best explained with examples from the lives of the Sufi scholars of the past. Here's a story of probably the most famous and well-known of them all. And there's various versions of his story. So about 900 years ago, a scholar was running a university. He used to write books by hand. The ink he used for writing was stored in small pots. There are reported to have been thousands of ink pots, and every ink pot had to be refilled every day. This gives us an idea of how much work he would be putting in. One day, in the middle of a lecture, a beggar came to one of his classes and started asking for charity. The scholar was annoyed and ignored the man, and he continued on with his lecture. Then the beggar got annoyed, and he said, "What are you doing?" The scholar just said, "It's something you can't understand." The furious beggar shoved a bookshelf with so much power that the shelf lost its balance and all the books fell down. They ended up slipping through the curtains, which were serving as modest walls of the school, and they fell into the nearby pond. Soon the scholar could see that the books were being washed away by the water and the ink was dissolving. The scholar began lamenting about his loss and cursing the beggar who was responsible for this. The beggar's heart melted. He began quickly picking up the books from the pond, one by one, and he would pick up a book, spin it, and the book would become dry, with the original ink still intact. And he did this with every book. In awe of the miracle he was watching, the scholar said, "What are you doing? How are you doing this?" The beggar said, "It's something you can't understand." The scholar stood silent and saw the beggar going away. The turn had come. The awakening was happening. The scholar shut down his school and wanted nothing more than to meet the beggar. He spent 3 years madly going from one place to another in search of that beggar. Then one day, finally, he found him. He got on his knees and touched the beggar's feet. "Who are you and where were you? I spent 3 years to find you." The scholar pulled him up and said, "It took you 3 years to find a teacher like me, but it's taken me 30 years to find a student like you." And he embraced him. The scholar was Jalaluddin Rumi, and the beggar was Shams Tabriz, who became Rumi's beloved teacher, who Rumi also mentions in his writings with great admiration and love for his work. Rumi is probably the most well-known Sufi scholar there is, and many people share his quotes all the time on social media. In my own personal Facebook page, I probably get 2 to 3 quotes from him every week by friends or family. But what most people don't know is that he was not just good at making profound quotes about brotherhood and kindness. He became a saint who devoted his entire life to teaching people about God. And like that of other Sufi scholars, Rumi's main theme is that of Tawheed, the oneness of God and being with the beloved, from whom he saw himself as being distant and cut off. And he was always trying to reach for God and God's pleasure. Another example of spiritual awakenings is of a British man I read about recently. He was a successful businessman who lived a fast life, excessive drinking, womanizing. But after a serious car crash at the age of 34 and a divorce where he lost custody of his children, he had a change of heart where he decided he wanted more out of life. He found God and decided to sell his businesses to set up a children's charity in Uganda. His name is John Pedley, and he made profound changes in his life. Now we'll discuss why we all need an awakening and be prepared for it. Nature's way to enlighten us, to awaken us, are not always easy to understand. We get blessed with pain and tears and loss so that we can come out of our life of intoxication, so we can meet our original selves. We seem to be knowledgeable and aware of everything else in life, about history, people, events, but most of us are ignorant about our own selves. We rarely spend any time to think about who we are and why we're here in this world. After all, the world was existing before our arrival, and it'll continue to exist after we die. Then why are we needed in this world? What purpose do we have? To find answers to these questions is to be spiritually awakened. And indeed, if we're living and haven't found these answers, and we're not even trying to, then we're not really living. It's difficult, and it takes a lot of effort, and it's a long and tiring journey. But any time and energy we use on this is well worth it. Because when we know who we are and what our purpose is, we become more capable to deliver, to add value, to make this world a better place, and to live a successful and happy life that we desire. Being prepared for the turn or the awakening call is also very important. We often miss these opportunities to change our lives. We fail to utilize our pains and our losses. It's said that these hardships that come into our life are like divine food that nourish our soul. So when we're mentally prepared for an awakening, we don't need to sit around and wait for something huge to happen in our lives in order to change it. We can start making changes for our turn and prepare ourselves for it. Being prepared, among other things, is a positive change in our attitude and behavior. Seeing good and bad circumstances require us to understand that we can't control everything, and things that we can't control, we should be ready to accept as God's will. Sufi tradition, and really most religious scriptures, teaches that gratitude, forgiveness, and acceptance deepen the roots of our wisdom. And the people who choose not to do this end up living their lives in self-praise and self-love. A wise person always acknowledges his deficiencies, recognizes his strengths, and then seeks a balanced course of action. Ella Wheeler Wilcox, the famous American author and poet, said, "There's no satisfaction that can compare with looking back across the years and finding you've grown in self-control, judgment, generosity, and unselfishness." Now let's talk about how pain is often a trigger for spiritual awakenings. Tragic incidents can become the trigger for spiritual growth for us. Like often we see that the death of a loved one gives birth to an awakening in someone, a change in someone. And those things that we see as a difficulty could be the very things that we need for our spiritual awakening. And if we recognize their true purpose, we might even one day say that we're grateful for those things in our life. These tragedies may make us into something greater, push us into some greatness that we'll never know that we had. Pain and calamities and loss can be that trigger to create us into who we really want to become, and without them, we might never be able to become. In the same way that we have to cut out any diseased or cancerous part of our bodies, and we have to bear that pain, we should know that at the end it's good for us, and it'll make us better. Qasim Ali Shaur lists 3 things that he sees as prerequisites for any spiritual awakening. These are things that we can do to change in ourselves that will give way to our life's own turn. The first is knowing ourselves. As we grow up, our motivational drives change. Initially, we may be happy with what we have and what we know. Then we start questioning things and we want to explore, we want to know everything, taste everything, experience everything, and see what the world holds. And when the time comes that we have these base desires fulfilled, we realize that there's something bigger than our carnal desires, and it starts by knowing who we are and where we want to go. This is consciousness performing its greatest task. He says one thing to remember is that if we want to know if the time for our life's turn has come, it's very simple. We can test it by knowing, has God filled our heart with contentment? And having these qualities is essential in knowing ourselves. I mean, imagine we're in the kitchen and we're going to make something, but we don't know if we're going to be making dinner or dessert. We're not going to be confident doing what we're doing, and we're certainly not going to enjoy the process. And the end product, whichever it turns out to be, will probably not be any good. In the same way, when we know who we are, our confident level will be high and we'll truly enjoy our lives and be happy. And our destinies will seem to invite us in the right direction where we want to go, giving us success. The second prerequisite is striving to be on God's path, a path that is towards something greater than ourselves. If we're on God's path, that caused our life to turn around and our souls to awaken. Scripture in all the major religions of the world are filled with stories of those who chose God's path and showed it to others. According to Sufi tradition, a sign that we're on God's path is that we experience a lot of wetness of the eyes, a sort of crying or tearing up. This is an expression of a kind and pure and sensitive heart. Because our definition of pain changes, we become more sensitive. We start to feel what others experience more than what we experience ourselves. Another sign of being on God's path is that we become grateful for whatever we have. We don't feel the need to ask others for anything. We take our needs only to God. Psalm 37:4 says, "Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart." And many people start taking this turn on a different path in their 40s. Professor Sarah Jane Blakemore, a neuroscientist with the Institute of Cognitive Neuroscience at the University College London, said, "Until around a decade ago, many scientists had pretty much assumed that the human brain stopped developing in early childhood. But recent research has found that many regions of the brain continue to develop for a long time after." Professor Blakemore said, "Brain scans show that the prefrontal cortex continues to change shape as people reach their 30s and up to their late 40s. 40s generally mark an age of immaturity. This is the age our needs change, when we start to give others what we hold dear ourselves. The meaning of things change. Greatness is when we feel happy in making others great. A person on that path towards God is marked by humility, generosity, forgiveness, compassion, and love." The third prerequisite in order to have a spiritual awakening is solitude. We get the real image of ourselves when we're alone, away from interruptions and distractions. Thomas Mann puts it concisely, solitude gives birth to the original in us. To have our spiritual awakening, we have to practice solitude. Most of us never really learn to enjoy solitude, and we don't really spend much time doing it. So we never actually do the self-analysis that's necessary. Self-analysis makes us aware of our enemies within us, our negative thoughts, our negative motivations, our negative beliefs. We also get a chance to contemplate our own previous actions and their results and causes. And learning about our own selves in solitude will help us to make changes within us. So now we'll talk about some of the signs of spiritual awakening. How can we tell if this has happened in our life or in the lives of those around us? Because it's not just hearts and minds that change. It's outward behaviors that definitely change as well. When I look at my own self, I know that, again, I'm a long way from any such type of turn. Although I do believe in God, I'm a Muslim, and I believe 100% in loving and caring for mankind and doing all those things that people have done after their spiritual awakening, I know I'm nowhere near to where I should be in my maturity or my spirituality or my values. But I know that if I put some work into it, if nothing else, I can improve myself. So now let's get into the 10 signs of a spiritual awakening. This is from the website motivationandselfimprovementguide.com. Number one, you'll find that your values are changing. So this is when we stop being so narcissistic and we recognize that we're just like everyone else. Number two is where we find that we're no longer willing to go along to get along. So just looking the other way when people are doing something wrong is not acceptable to us anymore. Number three, you find that you're becoming kinder. So things that never touched us before, like seeing those commercials about charities, about the misfortunes of others, may not have affected us as much as they do now. Sign number four, you no longer find pleasure in mindless activities. So instead of watching 6 hours of television and doing 4 hours of shopping a day, we might think we want to do something more productive. Sign number five, you find that you don't worry so much anymore. So this is when we realize, I think, that there's a higher power out there. It's not all in our hands. And we don't sweat the small stuff, and we feel more comfortable in our own skin. And number six, we rethink long-term relationships. We might start to realize we've surrounded ourselves with people who we can't relate to anymore, who might be a negative force in our lives. And we start to attract people who we can relate to, who actually are positive influences for us. Sign number seven, you develop a new appreciation for those in your life who really matter. So this is when we reflect and we think, who are those people who have always been there for us, who have been a positive force for us? And we become closer to that person. And we forget about the small squabbles or misunderstandings we've had with them, because we can see the greater picture and the greater benefit that they have in our lives. Sign number eight, you start rethinking your career choice. We start rethinking what we're doing every single day. We start to gain a new perspective of what's important to us and how we can make our dream come true. Sign number nine, you have found new energy to take on a self-improvement program like losing weight or stop smoking or exercise. And this is when we found it so difficult to do any of these before, but all of a sudden we have the energy, the time, the motivation to finally make changes. And finally, sign number 10, your tastes start to change. Now this could be food or books or cars or music, whatever it is. But we find that there's a whole new world of things that start attracting our attention. Okay, so in conclusion, we should know that there's something greater for us than where we are now. Something greater for us than who we are now. We should always be trying to be a greater version of ourselves. By turning our lives to something better, we'll be able to achieve the success and happiness that we seek. And we should try and be ready for our spiritual awakening and do those things that can help bring it about. Namely, striving to know ourselves, beginning a journey to God's path, and practicing solitude whenever we can. And then use the 10 signs of a spiritual awakening as a reference to see if we've made that turn. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's an honor for us that you listen. If you've enjoyed this, please share our link with others. We hope you'll continue to listen in. We'll post a new podcast every Sunday. We welcome your comments and questions. You can message us on our website, www.happinessnowpodcast.com, or contact us through Facebook. So until next time, take care and take control.